Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, May 17, 2021. The United Nations mission in Abyei condemns the killing of 13 people during an attack in a village in the area.
They have attacked the area in three different directions, and the result was the killing of 12, but only 11 dead are revealed.
And 5 people were killed during an attack on a South Sudan military post in Maridi County.
When they have the gunshot, and then they try to run away, others running to the bush, others running towards Mambe. And then the following morning, when the security went there, they start coming back to their home.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in the contested Abyei area say 13 people were killed over the weekend during an attack on a village by men suspected to be from the Meserie pastoralists. The deputy administrator for Abyei says the victims are civilians who return to the area to resettle. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
Con Manyet Matiok, who doubles as the local government and law enforcement minister, says 12 people were killed on Sunday morning. Matioka says gunmen attacked the Abyei administrative area at 5 a.m. Sunday.
They have attacked the area in three different directions, and the result was the killing of 12, but only 11 dead are revealed, with the other person which was killed from Unamet, and this one of Dungop, but one is not revealed yet, and 7 are injured. Some are seriously injured, with the broken legs, arms, some are lightly wounded, and all are now hospitalized.
Matioka says yesterday's attack occurred 2 days after the same assailants killed a 75-year-old charcoal burner and wounded a 65-year-old man in Dangwop village.
Their motive is to discourage Dungwop to resettle in their areas north of the area. That is why they are using, security, killing people, also losing properties, discouraging people from practicing livelihood. Like the person that was killed before was just a charcoal maker. Somebody who just make a charcoal, bring it to the market as a cooking mechanism for himself. So they want to discourage every activities that is being carried out in the area here.
Daniel Adekera, spokesperson for the United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei or UNISFA, says investigations have been launched to establish the motive of the attack and to deter further attacks.
The locals were attacked by some armed elements, which resulted in the death of about 11 people and several others wounded. So that's the report that we received. And of course, our troops immediately, on hearing the report, went to the scene. But unfortunately, the attackers had already left the place.
Abyei has remained a contested area by Sudan and South Sudan following since 2011, when South Sudan broke away from Sudan and became an independent state. Peace talks mediated by the African Union in 2012, held in Addis Ababa, failed to resolve the problem. Abyei leaders condemned the incident and called on UNISFA to arrest the attackers as a mechanism of restoring confidence and security in the area. Matioka says he knows the attack was carried out by Meseria militia herders and accuses Sudanese armed forces of backing them.
There are so many incidents where we reveal that some are involved, like the way they behave always is a professional way. It's not like somebody untrained, just get a weapon and you go. Like in Kolom, for example, UNISPA arrested five of them, and all five were really soldiers from SAF. And I believe the presence of SAF battalion, Kata 1 in Dipra, in form of Royal Police, most of them are from Syria. Most of the personnel in that forces are from Syria, and they are the one organizing all these atrocities.
Repeated calls to Sudan's armed forces, the Ministry of Information, Messeria Chief Mokhtar Babo Nimir, and head of the Peace and Reconciliation Committee of Messeria were unsuccessful. For VOA News, Amwake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still on Abyei, communities in the disputed Abyei region are welcoming the recent UN Security Council resolution extending the mandate of the United Nations Interim Security for Abyei for another 6 months. The Ngok community are calling on the international community to pressure South Sudan and Sudan to recognize the results of the unilateral 2013 Abyei referendum. For VOA News, ONN Walter Solomon reports from Juba.
The UN Security Council unanimously passed Resolution 2575 on Tuesday, extending UNISFA's mandate until November 15, 2021, after the government of South Sudan and Sudan failed to reach an agreement on the final status of the disputed region. The resolution says the situation in Abyei and along the border between South Sudan and Sudan continues to constitute a threat to international peace and security. Lieutenant General Kuol Diem Kuol, the chief administrator of the Abyei administrative area, says he and the Ngok Dinka community welcome the resolution extending UNISFA's mandate until mid-November because he and the community believe that UNISFA is working. But Kuol also says the Ngok Dinka community is concerned about the UN Security Council's call for the demilitarization of Abyei, say the council has called for the same thing in earlier resolutions, but weapons remain a problem in parts of Abyei.
The southern part where the Dinka are is demilitarized. All the ex-fellow soldiers are in Peach area, which is part of South Sudan. Our people also are not armed. Any time UNISFA gives you holding a gun, they take away the gun from you and they go and destroy it. What have remained now is the northern part of Abyei area, the areas of Kech, where there is the so-called oil police. That oil police, in fact, is not a police. This is the Sudanese Army Brigade 31 who have put on the police uniform, and they are the ones who are always destabilizing the area here.
Kuol says UNISFA has done little to control the movement of Messeria nomads, who he says often hide before launching attacks on the Ngok Dinka community, most of whom are farmers. He is appealing to UNISFA to disarm the Messeria nomads, who he accuses of destabilizing the Dinka communities in Abyei. He says he believes Abyei can be demilitarized if there is a determination from UNISFA and a political will from Sudan to disarm the Messeria so that people live in peace and are able to produce their own food.
The Messeria nomads, they are still moving in the area, but they are armed, and they move with their guns, with their cattle. As you know, the herders-farmers relation, when the herders are armed, they come always and disturb the farmers. We, the Dinka, we are farmers. The Arabs who are coming looking for pasta, they are destroying our crops.
Speaking to South Sudan in Focus by phone today, UNISFA spokesperson Daniel Adekera says the UNISFA mandate does not include disarming communities in Abyei.
We have the mandate to keep Abyei free of arms. That does not mean GDR, because this issue has come up. GDR is a post-conflict initiative. What we do is anywhere we see people with arms, we confiscate the arms and destroy them. That is different from DDR.
DDR stands for disarmament, demobilization, and reintegration. Deng Nyol, chairperson of Abyei Youth Association in Juba, says in order for there to be peace in Abyei, only communities from the area should be allowed to respond to a referendum on determining whether they want to belong to Sudan or South Sudan. He says the current instability in Abyei is due to a failure by both Juba and Khartoum to recognize the Abyei community's 2013 referendum.
Missouri already known they are in the north. Why do you consult them? They have been there for many years. But we, the people of Abyei, are the ones who are to be consulted. Where do we want to be? If we want to be in the north, that's fine. Let it be determined through the referendum. If we want to be in the south, let it also be determined through the referendum. The real problem is between the government of Sudan and government of South Sudan.
Abyei Rop, Information Secretary for the Abyei Youth Association, is calling on the UN to ensure the two parties commit to the results of the resolution.
We still need more effort from the UN to put pressure to the two governments of South Sudan and Sudan until we reach for a permanent resolution of the Abyei area.
For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
Local leaders in Western Equatoria say five people were killed during a recent attack on a military post at Barwulu village in Maridi County by suspected National Salvation Front rebels. The county commission of Maridi says he has sent security forces to the area to protect civilians. For VOA News, Siba Martin Murangi reports from Mundri.
Maridi County Commissioner Simon Sir Alfred says the assailants attacked the barracks on Friday, forcing some civilians in the area to flee their homes.
When they have the guns up and then they try to run away, others running to the bush, others running towards Mambe. And then the following morning, when the security went there, they start coming back to their home. But now in Barwulu district, the situation is calm.
Alfred says during the attack, the assailants burnt down all of the tents of the military barracks in Barwulu, leaving soldiers with nowhere to sleep. South Sudan Army Captain Alex Juma Edward is commander of the forces in the Barwulu barracks.
In Barwulu,
I have forces in Barwulu. They were taken there to mix with the South Sudan People's Defense Forces to protect the people because police are supposed to maintain law and order. But around 5:30 a.m., the enemies attacked the barracks, killing even my head bodyguard and a young girl of 12 years.
Edward says the victims include a 12-year-old girl. Three South Sudan Army soldiers and one police officer were also killed. He says the barracks accommodates both military and police dispatched to the area to protect civilians. A survivor who escaped from the attackers and spoke on condition of anonymity for fear of reprisal says the attackers took him to the bush where he was tortured.
They came and attacked us, so when we wanted to fire back at them, our guns got stuck. That is why they got chance to arrest me and started to beat me and took me with them to the bush. They beat me too much and even shot me on my leg.
The survivor says his attackers wore army, wildlife warden and police uniforms. He says the gunmen told their captives they were forces loyal to National Salvation Front leader Thomas Rilo. The survivor says he lives in fear because he believes the attackers might come back looking for him.
I'm so afraid because these are enemies I ran away from. I don't know where I will live. I know the forces, the forest where they took us across Barwulu up to Mambe where I escaped from them. They are somewhere across Barwulu heading towards Rasul.
South Sudan military spokesman Brigadier General Lul Rai Kwang would neither deny or confirm the attack took place, saying the information has yet to reach his office.
Most of the information that I normally receive had a confirmation from Operations Department. That's good of the old days. Most of California, they are not going through.
2 weeks ago, unidentified gunmen killed 5 people, abducted others, and burned 3 vehicles along the same Maridi Juba Road where Friday's incident occurred. No one has been arrested in the connection with that attack. For VOA News, I am Seba Martin Murangi in Mundri.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, Sudan says it has identified men suspected of shooting protesters last week. That story is lined up after this break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Sudanese authorities say they have identified nearly 100 suspects in connection with the killing of 2 protesters last week. Sudan's Attorney General said Sunday that his office received names of 7 primary suspects, including military officers believed to be behind the shooting of protesters last week. For VOA News, Michael Atit has more from Khartoum.
Sudanese Attorney General Tajel Cyril Hibir says the military leadership have handed over a full report which contains names of suspects believed responsible of killing 2 protesters last week who were marking the second anniversary of the mass protests that launched the Sudanese revolution. Speaking to the media in Khartoum over the weekend, Al-Hibir said the government has identified 7 primary suspects and more than 90 other suspects.
There are 7 primary accused individuals and we have 92 other suspects. All are held currently at the military prison. The public prosecution office will receive them and immediately begin an interrogation process in accordance to the Sudan Panel Act.
2 protesters were killed and 37 others were wounded in Khartoum on Tuesday. The Sudanese Professional Association condemned the attack and called it a violation of freedom of assembly. Advocate Abdurrahman Muhammad Hussein, head of the Darfuri Bar Association, describes the process as a good step towards achieving justice for the victims. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus in Khartoum, Hussein questioned why the military ranks of the suspects are not mentioned in the report. He thinks the named suspects could be innocent junior officers who were trapped into carrying out order from above.
It's difficult at the moment to anticipate any legal opinion because the process is still at an early stage. But what I have observed on the list is that the military ranks are not mentioned. These individuals might be soldiers innocently accused for nothing. We expected the military leadership could have released this list and indicate their military ranks to the public.
Hussein insists the Attorney General should demand the military leadership disclose the ranks of the suspects and identify the commander who gave the order to shoot live bullets at protesters. He says he wonders why this particular incident led to immediate legal procedures while many similar incidents have occurred across the country but nothing was done. He says he believes the government wanted to clear up its image with the international community while a conference on Sudan kicks off in France.
This is going to be an obvious question they are going to get from journalists and donors at the France conference. That's why they decided to speed up this process. They normally ignore incidents that happened at state levels, but speed up the process that happens in Khartoum.
Al-Hibir says the court trial will begin immediately after his office is finished interrogating the suspects. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
French President Emmanuel Macron kicks off a 2-day summit today. The first day is dedicated to investment and debt relief for Sudan. The second day, Tuesday, will be dedicated for debt relief and support for overall COVID-hit African countries. A senior economic advisor at Sudan's Ministry of Finance and Economic Planning says his government will showcase its recent economic reforms to attract investors. A U.S. Bay's think tank released a report today saying international donors and creditors at the conference must push for more economic reforms and transparency in Sudan. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
The two-day conference in Paris is sponsored by French President Emmanuel Macron, brought together representatives from the United Nations, the European Union, African and Arab countries, as well as international and regional financial institutions such as the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and the African Development Bank. A high-level government delegation that includes Sudan's Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok, the head of Sudan's Sovereign Council Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, Sudan's Foreign Affairs Minister Maryam al-Sadiq al-Mahdi, and Finance Minister Jibril Ibrahim arrived in Paris on Sunday to take part in the conference. Mehdi Amin is Senior Economic Advisor at Sudan's Minister of Finance. He tells VOA this is an important moment because it signals Sudan's reintegration into the international community.
After long series of reforms under the IMF staff monitored program, removal from the U.S. state sponsors of terrorism list, removal from the clearance of arrears to the World Bank and to the African Development Bank, and the signal from the World Bank and IMF that we are in fact heading toward HIPC debt relief. So there's a lot of things going on, and this is a bringing together the key stakeholders to acknowledge that.
Besides seeking debt relief, Sudanese officials are using the conference to pitch investment projects for infrastructure, energy, and transportation, among other areas. Before she left for Paris, Sudan's Foreign Affairs Minister, Maryam al-Sadiq al-Mahdi, said her government expected 70% of Sudan's debt to be cancelled. Here's Amin again.
It is now the time to acknowledge what has been done, to let the private sector know, many of whom are not familiar with Sudan, and because of sanctions and the SSTL and other things, were in some way kind of prohibited or had obstacles to taking a hard look at Sudan. But the time to really take a good look and to consider really profitable win-win investments is at the early stages of an economic turnaround. We believe we're in those early stages now, that growth will resume.
Official figures show Sudan's inflation rate stands at more than 300%, with most Sudanese citizens struggling to put food on the table. The U.S.-based Sentry, which seeks to expose corruption and dirty money related to African wars, released a report Monday warning of the continuing threat to a successful civilian-led transition after the 30-year rule of former President Omar al-Bashir. The report details an array of business operations in the mining, commercial, and construction sectors, largely controlled by military and security services, including several commanders of the Rapid Support Forces, which have been accused of widespread atrocities in Darfur and other parts of Sudan. Suleiman Baldo is a senior analyst at the Sentry and lead author of the report.
The Paris Conference offers the government the opportunity to convince its creditors that Sudan and the civilian-led transitional government and the transition in the country really merits the extension of debt relief to alleviate the burden of Sudan's external debt, standing now at nearly $60 billion, inherited from years and decades of corruption and mismanagement and squandering of the resources of Sudan.
Baldo says donors at the Paris conference can best support Sudan's transition and economy by providing immediate relief to support citizens living under harsh economic conditions. He says while Sudan has undertaken important measures to reform the economy, this progress risks being undone unless it is rooted in a tangible shift away from the corrupt system operated for decades by the former regime.
To be able to continue reforming the distortions inherited from the Bashir regime, Sudan needs injections of economic and financial support to alleviate the burden of these reforms on the population. The donor community represented in the Paris conference could also make demands on the government of Sudan to really reform its own institutions, such as by addressing the problem, which is discussed in this brief, that of giant powerful state-owned enterprises that exist in Sudan. The Ministry of Finance has estimated their number to be between 500 and 600.
Amin acknowledges deeper reforms must be made.
This is a long process. The Sudan will be continuing to reform, you know, for years, if not forever. There are always things that can be improved. Some of the big things we need to do now, civil service reform is very important.
Amin also says the democratic transition must continue. An economic conference was convened to support Sudan's economy last year in Berlin, where donors pledged $1.8 billion to Sudan, mostly in humanitarian and relief programs. Sudan has since been removed from the U.S. state sponsors of terrorism, cleared its debts to the World Bank and the African Development Bank through bridge loans from Western countries. At the start of the conference today in Paris, France pledged to provide Sudan with $1.5 billion to clear its arrears to the International Monetary Fund. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
From Washington, we move to Awil, where some residents of northern Bahr el-Ghazal state say poor crop harvest coupled with high food prices is making many families to go without food. The UN World Food Programme says it is distributing food to vulnerable families in the area. For VOA News, Hoa Kot Ho reports from Awil.
Residents across Awil East, West, South, North and Central counties of northern Bahr el-Ghazal state say they are going hungry. 43-year-old Monane, a resident of Apata village in Awil, is a harvesting son. He hopes to sell it to people who are building so he can raise money to buy food. And he says he finds it increasingly difficult to feed his 8 children. He says he has not had a regular job for about 10 years, so he has resorted to selling son in the local market to earn a little money to try to feed his family.
We are so vulnerable in this community, so we just accumulate the heap of sandy soil, as you see me doing it, for sale just for a living, because nobody comes for our rescue. And this sand we just put for sale takes days without being bought by people who need it for construction.
Awil resident James Otto says the ongoing food insecurity in the area is caused by high food prices in the market.
Just you are living like a human beings, but you are not free. One day you are happy, one day you are unhappy. Even we are cultivating, and the problem is we have nothing in the market, like food or commodities.
Traders here say even though the local currency has appreciated in value against the dollar in recent weeks, traders would operate at a loss if they reduced their prices. Deng Makolatian is the chairperson of the Northern Bahr el-Ghazal State Chamber of Commerce. He says traders are not able to reduce food prices unless the government introduces a policy on the prices of goods.
When there is a competition, the price will come down. Because if there is someone selling in the cheap price and there is someone selling in the high price, the price itself will adjust themselves and they will also come down. So I just want to assure each and every one, this is the first step. And the second step, maybe the goods which are on ways coming, maybe they will adjust the shooting price in the market.
Otto also says international humanitarian organizations are doing little to help the food insecure population in northern Bahr el-Ghazal state. He says residents often see aid agencies stocking food, but they never see the food being distributed.
Sometimes you get the warehouses full of the grains, everything, but after 2-3 days, this thing all disappear. But where is it gone?
Al-Mijdad Abdallah, head of the World Food Program Peel Office in northern Bahr el-Ghazal state, denies allegations that aid agencies are doing little to help the food insecure population in the area. He says WFP distributes food to only vulnerable people.
So food is not actually supposed to go for every person in the state. Food has to be appropriated. Most of the people, when you do the interviews, you find they don't meet the criteria, because the criteria, as you know, it's based on vulnerability.
Abdallah says WFP is shifting its focus from food distribution to helping communities produce their own food. Even in times of drought, the WFP Peel Office in Awil says 150,000 households in the Wool South County alone are put insecure. For BOA News, I'm Ho Akodo in a Wool.
That's our show for this Monday. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.